This is How to Business in Show Business, where we talk about the business of show, the podcast that discusses ways to work smarter, not harder. If you're a performer at the beginning of your career or a student interested in going into the performing arts, this is the podcast for you. For more about the podcast, you can find our website at businessandshowbusiness.com. There you can learn more about the business of performing arts with coursework, videos with shop talk, and interviews with other professional performers. Now here's your host, Corben.
Hello, I'm your host, Corben, and welcome back to another episode of How to Business in Show Business. Before we get started, go ahead and click that subscribe button so you can stay caught up anytime there's a new post. Actors, thanks for joining me for another episode. In this week's part of our conversation, we're going to continue with Sean talking about headshots. And as always, let me just say this, because I say the same thing every time. If you have not listened to part one of this conversation, you're going to what? You're going to go back and listen to that, and then you're going to come back here and pick up with episode two, part two of this conversation. We're going to talk about how to find a headshot photographer when you're in the market, and then when you're out of the market, what's a good substitute? Sean says very adequately in this conversation, invest money in things you use all the time. Listen, we as actors use headshots all the time. Why would you not invest in something that is going to help you as opposed to hinder you? Now on that note, Google's your friend. So when you're on your way looking for headshot photographers, you're gonna look up research, you're gonna look up the budgeting and the pricing, and what are the current looks, staying within the know. And also in this conversation, we're gonna talk about the the developmental phase. So without further ado, here's part two of that conversation. You said find a photographer. I wonder if we can break that down a little bit more. So you and I know how to go about finding a photographer, but for someone who's, let's say, not in the market of New York, LA, Vancouver, Toronto, Chicago, Atlanta, so on, right? Versus someone who is in those things, I've found that there's three different ways, and please correct me if I'm wrong. One of the best ways you can find a photographer is going about networking. If you happen to know people who are currently in the business, again, speaking for those who are in the market first, if you know someone who is in the business, asking your peers and your colleagues, who might they work with? Who might they recommend, right? Then there's such a thing known as advertisement boards. When you go into like a Steps on Broadway and or Pearl Studio, they have that huge advertisement boards, and there's always a lot of photographers who drop their business cards. And then the last thing that you could possibly do is, listen, when in doubt, use a good old Instagram, headshots, hashtag, headshot photographers. Do you, any one of those things would work, and there's no wrong way about it. Would those be good recommendations if someone who was not connected in the business first, moving from a smaller market to a bigger market, would you recommend those two, any of those three things?
Yeah, I think that's exactly how I would go about it. That's how I would do it. Mm-hmm. There's also places like, I don't know if Backstage does. I'm sure they have something with headshot photographers. I know Reproductions, but you would know about Reproductions if you weren't in New York. Right. You know, Reproductions is a known New York print lab, retouching lab. And they also do, they've expanded in other things, but they have a, like sort of a long list of New York photographers as well. But if you're not in that market, like Facebook, check out your anyone that you know that's already in New York, on who they shot with. I would take the exact same approach that you are taking. Because there isn't, that I'm aware of, which is also kind of a good business opportunity. There's no like go-to website for New York headshot photographers or LA headshot photographers. I'm sure there's a lot of micro sites that haven't really taken traction. There must be, but nothing that I'm aware of, and clearly you're not aware of either. So I don't know, maybe I should get on that. Because I mean, that wouldn't that be easy? If you just go to headshotphotographers.com, let's say, I'm sure that domain's taken, and you could just click on your state and city and find a listing of photographers. I know things like that exist, but nothing where it's mainstream enough.
Wow.
But I would do Instagram, like ask your colleagues, do an Instagram hashtag search, Facebook groups. Pretty much what you described.
And if you're not already in that market, as you just said, sometimes your beginning work might not be the end all of be all. So having just something. Complete side note, and then we'll get back to it. What was your first camera, by the way?
It was a Canon Rebel RS.
Okay.
Which is a 3/4 inch sensor. It was $499. It was the cheapest DSLR that you could get at the time. And I had a really, the cheapest, like 24 to like 80, it wasn't 24 to 70 millimeter, and like a 1 to 300 millimeter lens. It wasn't a point and shoot where, you know, like that, the pocket, the old school pocket cameras, but it was like the cheapest DSLR you could buy. And then I did the math. Same thing when I bought a leaf blower. I was like, well, what do I need to charge to make my money back on this? And I was like, shit, if I only charge $100, that's way cheaper than anything else is charging. And like five people and I break even, like that's easy. Like who would say no to $100 photo shoot? So but I think it was the Canon Rebel RS.
Okay. Cause that's been plaguing my mind. But anyways, I had to get to that before I forgot. Okay. So we just talked about finding a photographer. And to conclude this thought, so if you're someone who's not yet in said market of one of those major, what would you constitute as just a headshot to get them by in the meantime, i.e. an iPhone or a Canon or a Nikon? Would you recommend in studio, again blank wall, or on location
for someone? I would recommend, that's a great question. So here's my recommendation for price shoppers. If you are price shopping, okay, let me start, pull back even further. Your career hinges on someone clicking on how good your picture looks. Okay.
Yes.
If you're price shopping that, I would say take an iPhone picture in portrait mode and start saving your money go with who has quality. Pricing that, you know, if someone charges $2,000 for headshots, they might be old school and like their style may not be suitable. So like, it's not about the price, it's about the quality and what is a good fit for you. Okay. But I would say if you're looking for price shopping, don't shoot with the budget photographer. You'll look like a B-lister. Mm-hmm. It doesn't speak well for you. You're better off taking an iPhone picture, having it look like an iPhone shot. Portrait mode, by the way, you can get some phenomenal pictures in portrait mode. I played around with it. And have someone go, oh, okay, that's an iPhone shot. It's almost less of a mark against you than just having like a B-grade headshot. And I would say use a big window. I would shoot inside. I wouldn't shoot outside unless you really know what you're doing with outside lighting. I would stand in front of the largest window that you have, so you have a big light source, and have everything behind you thrown out of focus. Try not to have it like any sort of like obvious items, trying to keep it ambiguous behind you. But I would recommend doing it in front of a window or a door frame that's facing outside. That can also be really nice light. And then save your money to shoot with someone good. Here's my thoughts on spending money. You invest money in things that you use all the time. If you use it all the time, it's worth buying the best within or a little above your budget.
That's good.
Buy the budget camera because I use the camera all the time. I buy the best one that makes sense for my business. And I do that because I use it all the time. You'll get return on investment with it. You know, you really like, it almost makes you want to reconsider really rethink about how serious are you if you're looking to cut corners in the wrong places. Like, it's just not a place that you cut corners. I'm not saying you have to spend $2,000 on headshots, but if you're like, hey, $600 is way too much, I'm going to go with the $200 guy. It's like, okay, it's a $400 difference, but we're talking about you jumpstarting your career for an extra $400 and you should get years out of your photos. Like, to me, I would say, okay, that's worth the little extra. Like, I want to make sure that I can control what I can control and get the best I possibly can, especially when it's a picture of my face.
Right.
You know, like, right. You want to make sure that you like it.
Speaking of face, okay, so you found the photographer, or you found a potential photographer that you like. Research, budget, and what's currently popular or standard looks. Let's first start with this.
First of all, I was lucky that I found you and you found me. However, though, it was kind of like made in the stars when Chad had like offered you up. So, I mean.
Oh, that's right. Chad. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Like, I've been with you since I got out of college. But wow. For those who aren't that lucky, what would you say is the most important thing when, okay, let's say you have 3 to 4 photographers that you might be potentially interested in working with. They're all important. I can't really pick. But like I said, research, budget, and standard popular, or what's the current popular vibe, does it make a difference?
Okay, so do all three of those things make a difference in like the headshot?
In terms of who you find, well, actually, yes. See, I can't yeah. I can't speak to this because like you're so my pricing, guy, and I found you, which was an easy thing.
So pricing. Okay, so let's start with pricing. Does pricing make a difference in the headshot? Typically, I'll generalize here. Cheaper pricing typically means they're either a high volume studio, so they're making their money based on volume. So now you're sort of in a rush job / cookie cutter headshot, right? Fixed lighting setup. We have 30 minutes or 15 minutes. Boom, 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 boom. Okay, we have another 3 minutes. Boom, 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 boom. Okay, great. Out you go. Okay, was that like the most amazing experience? Probably not. Was it cheap? Yes. When you pay more money, you are paying for experience. So, you know, let's say if I did a shoot for $1,000 and we're done and we covered 6 looks and they're amazing and you're done in an hour and a half. And it's like, well, let's say we allotted 3 hours. It's like, well, shouldn't we be shooting longer? It's like, no, that is precisely what you just paid for. We're done. You didn't even realize it. You got 6 amazing looks and you're still stress-free like nothing ever happened. That doesn't come by accident. And that comes through experience, a lot of experience in years and knowing, taking so many things into consideration to produce a high quality, marketable shot that's completely tailored to that individual. So that typically comes at a cost. So it's not necessarily always just the time. You're really paying for experience as the pricing gets higher. And then there's times too where people really exploit that. There are some photographers that are charging out, in my opinion, I know what goes into getting a great shot. They're like on the cusp. But if that's their rate and they feel that they're worth it, good on them. But I think there's a certain realm, like, you know, I don't think for between $1,000 and $2,000 photographer, there's going to be a significant quality difference. It's not like that. You're not buying, going from a Toyota to a Mercedes. You can't kind of make that comparison, but I would say anything between $500 to $1,000 and up, somewhere in there, you start getting into like established people. Yeah. But pricing doesn't always necessarily equal quality, but it normally equals experience. And then you got to go with whose style you like and have a conversation with them and make sure that they're a good fit. What was the second thing that you mentioned?
The second thing was standard and or popular headshot looks. And I know this is something that you and I have talked about.
That's a great question.
Yeah.
So like the style is ever changing and that's really up to the photographer to be aware of that. And also that they have their own style and that it's relative to what's current in the market. And actor headshots are a really specific type of portrait that evolves, and I've seen the evolution happening, and now we're in a shift here over the last 12 year and a half where it's sort of evolving again. So that's up to the photographer to be aware of those things on like what's marketable, what looks dated. I mean, there's just use of light can make a shot look dated to make it look marketable or not, just how they light you and the background they use and how they position you, how they frame you, all these subtle things. So that's up to the photographer to dial that in. Typically lower cost photographers, again, I'm totally generalizing here. Yeah. You can find a diamond in the rough for sure, but the style will be a little dated or just a little not interesting, I guess. Light's a little flat. And then the third one was?
I'm just doing your research. Like there's no rush to get there's no rush. And so taking your time to find the right person, whether that means budget, whether that means the aesthetic and the way in which they shoot. I don't know if this is a question as opposed to more of a statement. Again, you and I know this, but I ask these questions because what I felt, first of all, let me just say this. I really appreciated when you emailed me back saying that my questions were very targeted and pointed, and they have to be because for someone who's not already in the market, who does not understand this, I'm trying to, within their scope, here are things that you should maybe consider if you don't have access to these things. So I know these may sound redundant for you and I, but I'm really trying to just say it for them.
Are they great questions? So, they really are.
Thank you.
They're
very
pertinent, like in good core questions that people are probably wondering getting into this. And you know, like when you're coming out of college, let's say we're speaking to probably a lot of college students who are wondering these questions. Yeah. And like, you probably shot with the college headshot photographer, or your friend that's good with a camera, like that's fine. Like you need to start somewhere.
Right.
Don't expect your first session, especially if you're shooting locally, to be like the shot. There's a development phase. You know this too. Mm-hmm. Like you develop as a human and that translates in your photos. And also when you're starting your first shot, you know, photo shoot or two, you may not know what you're looking for, or what quality, what, you know, you don't have a feel for it yet. So you kind of just, you learn, they're just learning experiences. But I would say about your like third professional shoot or second, definitely try to like learn, like just you get your headshots in college, like they're probably not going to be like mind blowing unless you have like a great photographer coming in or you go to New York or Los Angeles. And then it's like, that's cool. Like no one's going to hold that against you. The agents and casting know that you're young and fresh. But then I would put it on the priority list to like, okay, let's get the 2.0 headshot. Like, let's get like my A game on. Now I'm in the real world.
Hmm. Something else that I know you and I have talked about is when you go on to go to get your shots done, bring options, bring looks, because what you thought may work might not work. Or if you're an in-studio photographer or a location photographer, how important is it? And what do you think, just generically, everyone should include in their option looks?
Yeah, so wardrobe, there's three parts to make up your headshot that I've diluted it down to. Your expression, your body language, and what you're wearing. They're all really important. Wardrobe is really important because it's going to, and this ties into the style of what's happening with headshots now. Headshots are becoming slightly more character-driven, more so in Los Angeles, like where people go in and like in the cop uniform or nurse uniform, like it's a little sticky almost. But New York is becoming a little more character driven with the headshots too. So what you're wearing is important. You want to first give thought to what is your type or how do you want to present yourself? If you're new, you're probably not going to know that. So you have to give some thought to this. Talk to your teachers, talk to your friends. What kind of type do you see me as? How do you see me marketing myself, or what character types? Then put together some wardrobe options that support and make sense for those types. You should base your decision on two things with wardrobe. What makes sense for the character type and what looks good in the mirror. If the character wears it, but you hate how it looks, don't bring it, because you're not going to like how it looks. So find out what makes sense for the character type and that what you like in the mirror. And then it's up to the photographer to make that look amazing. Don't worry about what photographs well. That's up to the photographer to make that look good. I would say in general, leave graphics and logos out. You know, you don't want like a flashy, typically like graphics and logos in your headshot, because that's going to take away from your photo. And also I would say like super high contrast patterns, but even if you layer that, sometimes that can work. So if it's something you really love, bring it. But the focus of your decision-making should be what makes sense for the character type and what you love, how it looks in the mirror. And I would bring 2 to 3 options maximum per look. You want to do your homework prior to the studio. You want to have some backup options, but you don't want an overwhelming amount where it's like, hey, here's all my shit. And then you just like throw it on the floor. It's like, okay, now we're like trying to brand you on the fly. You want to give thought, because the more homework, this is really the only homework you have to do for your headshots, is wardrobe selection. And it's not that difficult. It's so simple. But the more homework you do, the more efficient and high quality your session will be and more stress-free. So I do notice a difference, when someone does their homework coming into the studio, because we can go get right to what they need and we already know what they need and they already know what they want to wear. And in the rare case that it doesn't photograph well, or they don't like how it looks, we jump into option 2 and we get it there.
Speaking of which, contrasting looks, and I know this was my first time doing this with you. How important is it to have two contrasting looks, i.e. If you're a guy, starting the shoot with facial hair as opposed to then shaving it off, or if you're a woman having your ingenue look versus your mature leading lady look, in your perspective as a photographer, how crucial can that be?
It can make a huge difference. So I'll say this, when you decide to make bold changes, do it because it makes sense for your marketability, not just because it's different. Mm-hmm. For, you know, if like you never, there's a guy I just shot. I think I want to go clean shaven. I'm like, right on, let's do it. But he's like, I would never audition clean shaven. And I haven't been clean shaven in 5 years. I'm like, well, are you going to even use it? He's like, I don't know. I was like, okay, well, are you going for a certain type or why are you doing? He's like, I'm just doing it because I thought it makes sense. So I would say do it because it makes sense, not because it's different. And with that said, your headshot is a marketing tool, essentially. Hmm. Obviously, it's a very personal photo, but it's a marketing tool. So your headshots are like different tools. And the more diverse your toolkit is, the more ways you have to market yourself to speak to different character types. So it can be really important to have fulfill different slots and have one that plays your age up or down, to one have really clean and youthful and the other one a little bit more moody and dramatic. I mean, they can make a huge difference in your presentation. And, you know, as an actor, many times you don't want to be, you want to speak to what you market best, but you also want to show versatility. Yeah. And your headshot will really allow you to do that because with wardrobe, lighting, and expression, that'll can dramatically change your appearance on how you market yourself. You know, if you want to look 18 or 30, that's possible depending on your look, lighting, and expression and all. Mm-hmm. So I think it is important, but, you know, let's remember it's a marketing tool. Yeah. So you want to have a marketable range of yourself with your images. So when you submit to a casting or an audition, or a role, that you have a headshot that speaks to that part. You want to spoon feed them. Like, we work in the creative arts and people aren't that creative. They just kind of want to see it. Mm-hmm. So when you have, it's like, hey, they need a dramatic type. It's, that you have a headshot that speaks to that. And they're like, hey, back to school, Target commercial, that like, you could give them your dramatic headshot, but like, that's not going to speak to them. Like, you know, if you're, it's a bright commercial, youthful lit headshot, commercial headshot, you know, you give them that one, it's going to resonate with them much more. So.
Do you recommend it to your clientele who are people of color, if that is within the realm of where they live, having their natural look?
I see.
As opposed to their commercial look, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I see. Okay. I would answer this as a blanket statement to anyone because it really doesn't, to me, make a difference. Because anyone could come in. Some people just have their own style, sure, whatever, whoever they are. And it's about finding a balance of like your everyday look versus what's marketable. Mm-hmm. And how I talk to people, and normally that's something to address with someone that's coming into it new. Mm-hmm. And they'll ask that question. And I would say, first and foremost, like, I wouldn't suggest personally, and this is just my opinion, reinventing your entire look, mm-hmm, unless you're completely comfortable and all about doing that. But if it's against all your will to be like, I always wear this, or I always have this look, and I would never wear it this way, and I don't feel comfortable doing it, I would say venture away from doing that. It's just not within a sensible realm for you. But there's a balance to it, because you do want to be able to market yourself in a variety of ways. You want to keep it marketable. So if you're someone that's like, hey, I wear yellow lipstick and like black and red hair, I'll be like, listen, you've got a specific look. Like, if that's your go-to, just be aware that you're really narrowing down your marketability, and you may want to consider something that's a little bit more, that's like less of a statement, mm-hmm, and less about your hair and your lipstick and more about you. Mm-hmm. And then I flip it on that person to find out what their comfort zone is. That some people are receptive, you know, receiving like, okay, yeah, totally. And other people are like, well, this is just me. And then I can only make them aware of their choices and like the outcome that it'll probably have. Mm-hmm. But I think it is smart to think at or to think about your photos as marketing tools and how you can market yourself differently within a spectrum that feels like you. Mm-hmm. You don't want to have like artificial you. I to me, it's important that all your shots resonate with you. Mm-hmm. That like you don't look at your pictures and you don't know who that person is because it's so different. I think it's important that you will, like we can explore and showcase different essences of your personality, but at the end of the day, they resonate with all of you. Otherwise, you're just like, what, like who is this person? It's like you're a total facade. Mm-hmm. So be confident with who you are. Express yourself in different ways. You're more than one. Everyone's more than one dimensional. And work within that realm. That would be my suggestion. And that's to anyone that comes in saying, this is my look or style, or has a specific look. That's how I would address it. Like, listen, this is how it's gonna probably market you. You may wanna consider expanding. Here are some ideas. What sits with you and are you open to these ideas? I'm making it a little bit more, I don't wanna say in the middle, because what the hell is that? But but if you have some bold styling choices, then I would say, you know, you may want to, like if someone comes in and they have one of their, like a wig or weave has dreads, mm-hmm. and but her hair is naturally, she has like an afro or something, I'll right. be like, yo, that's a beautiful look too. Like those are two really great, distinct, different looks. Like you should exercise those. And many times I'd be like, okay, awesome, amazing. And we'll end up doing something like that.
Okay. Is there a difference between vertical and horizontal? And let me explain in terms of headshots, because I know sometimes commonly used horizontal shots are used primarily on the West Coast in terms of that film aspect when you're looking, you know, to give the representative of like, oh, here's what it looks like through camera. And vertical is commonly used or most commonly used in theater. Mm-hmm. Does it really matter?
No, it's a styling preference. I would say landscape is a little bit more contemporary, mm-hmm. or horizontal is a more contemporary. It's mm-hmm. a little bit, it can be a little bit more cinematic because it's in a 16:9 format like film. It's more traditional to shoot portrait, but there's no right or wrong to it. These are preference based. You'll have one agent that says, I don't like landscapes. You'll have another agent says, I love the landscapes. So that's a visualing styling preference. You can get amazing shots with both. One doesn't fit a market more than the other. I personally, for cinematic stuff, like shooting landscape in 16:9, because when I'm shooting those, I kind of want it to be the feel of it being like a still pulled mm-hmm. right out of a film stock. Yeah. And so that is landscape. But if I were to shoot theater, and for some people, horizontal or portrait works better too, just for some reason, the framing works for certain people. Mm-hmm. So there's no right or wrong. It's a really good question. There's no right or wrong to it. You can get amazing stuff with both. It's whatever you like and whatever fits, you know, how you look on camera best. And many times the photographers would play around with that too. I always do. Like, let's try, you know, sometimes I'm like, do you have a preference? If you don't, let's play around with both. Mm.
I want to dive into this. We talked about marketing earlier, and I want to dive into specific marketing looks. I came across this article, which I will have to cite later, and it was breaking it down in terms of, because I know you had roughly talked about this when we were talking about getting your headshots, marketing yourself in the vein of what you think you do best. Mm-hmm. And it was breaking it down into categories such as girl next door, guy next door, edgy young professional for kids. And then it breaks down into your early 20s, and then your more early 30s, and just in terms of the roles that you can play, right? My question is, obviously when you're getting your headshots done for photography, you don't have the option to have, you don't have the luxury to, well, maybe you do, I don't know, depending on your finances, get all six different looks. But if that's not the case, working with a photographer who's maybe not going to charge you an arm and a leg for those, do you think that's maybe important to take pictures in the vein of, I don't know, the hipster or the jock or the barista, like those pics that really mark you in terms of like, oh, here's what I visually look like, and then like share that to your social media?
Okay, so yeah, I think I understand your question. If you're saying if you're going to sort of only shoot a couple different looks. Let's say you need 5 looks.
Yeah.
But your finances only support you to shoot 2, let's say, right? Like mm-hmm. do a 2 session.
Yeah.
Are you asking which?
Outside of that, yeah.
Okay, so you're saying, maybe I don't understand the question.
So we've just done our headshot session. You've given me my professional look at my more mature look, and then you give me my ingenue look for me. But then outside of that, because I know that I don't have the extra funds to, you wouldn't even require the extra funds because you give your clientele, if memory still serves, you give them the whole stock of those. It's not edit, not all of them are edited, just the ones that I picked to use for my headshots. Do you think within that session, it would be wise for me then to, let's try my young professional look. Let's try my Disney look. Let's try my CBS, my Law and Order look, my freeform, my side. Do you know what I'm saying? Breaking it down in terms of like whether it's the network look or whether it's the specific art type.
Oh, totally. Yeah, totally. I mean, with regards to your looks, like, does it make sense to really be that specific with them? Is that what you're asking? Like,
if you know your brand and type of what you can play, and if you know your brand and type or your product and type of what you are seen as, you could be as specific as you want. But if you just want to be generic of like, great, here's my Disney look, here's my CBS look.
Yeah, you know, yes, good question, good answer. Your answer is good. I would say walking into it, your primary shot,
yeah.
You want to call it your legit shot, whatever. Mm-hmm. I would say, for starters, get a powerful shot that looks and feels like you. You look at it, you say, wow, that's me. I feel like I look amazing in that picture. That's me on my best day. And then I would build supporting looks beyond that. And if you know your marketing, then you target those specific looks like power attorney, cop, mm-hmm. business professional, mom, dad, Home Depot guy, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then if you're not sure, I would do sort of like generic, because you want to sample the market essentially. Sure. Yeah. And I think that's a great suggestion, and I wouldn't, haven't even formulated that thought to words before. And I think you hit the nail on the head. I would suggest that of like putting together sort of like generic markets that you mm-hmm. feel would make sense for your type.
Yeah.
And get some shots to support that. I mean, what's the worst that can happen? You don't end up working that market, but at least you have to try.
Yeah.
And the faster you know you find out your marketability and where you sell best, the better. So I think that's a really smart suggestion.
I do talk about this in a later episode. In terms of look, I understand when we're just not coming out of school and we don't really know, we don't even know our own product type and brand yet. I mean, you may have just spent 4 years for that BFA, for those 2 years in that conservatory program or whatever, and maybe not a lot of time was put into, well, what roles can I play? What roles do I look like? So then I curated a worksheet that, great, you hand this to someone. You hand this to 10 people, 5 people who are in the business, 5 people who are not in the business, or people who aren't in the business in general. What could you see me playing in terms of network, roles, types? Right. Like, help. I'm trying to break down the product. Because again, you and I know these things, yeah. But for someone who has not thought out beyond that, how to then not reinvent the wheel. I've been told I look like Chris Rock and David Oyelowo and Taye Diggs. Great, let me not reinvent the wheel. What roles have they done that are within my talent, my wheelhouse as an actor to deliver on? And let me see if I can go in for those same things. Anyways, I'm getting off on a tangent. Anyways, focus. Last question as far as this goes.
Hold on, that's a really good point. Like whoever is listening in on this conversation, like really let that sink in, because that's really important to know. Don't reinvent the wheel. And also don't fight your type. It's a great platform. If everyone sees you as a certain way, yeah. Like Mo from the Three Stooges wanted to be a dramatic actor.
Yeah.
But he crushed it in comedy. So I would say certainly starting off, don't fight, find your marketability, how people view you, and start, use that as a starting point. And if you don't already know what your type is or what you want to pursue. Yeah. But yeah, I think that's an excellent suggestion and information for someone getting into it. Like, that it's important. You know your type. Like, this, you have to know how to market yourself.
And I feel like that's half the battle. And again, when kids, i.e. myself, because I'm still, you know, relatively young for college, we come out of school not knowing how to market ourselves. Yes, we have the material, but as far as being being so specific, and I think there's such a thing that, with intent. Great, you know you want to work in film and TV. Who do you want to work with in film and TV? What showrunner specifically do you want to work with? What casting then do you need to get in front of? And if auditions aren't enough, when you are ready for the pay to play situation, what whose classes should you be taking? Anyways, right. I talk about all this in a later episode, you guys, but I'm slightly tapping on it now. But
yeah, whoever, like, listen to all that stuff, people, because it's really important.
I try. So this question, and I think you and I had talked about this once before, how often should actors be getting their headshots?
Oh, that's a great question. I would say if you really want to stay on it, once a year, once every 12 months, if you really want to stay on it. And two reasons. One, I would say between, we'll go from high school age through out of college, your look actually does change. You physically do change going into your early 20s, even mid 20s. Actually, you never stop changing, but it's significant. So even in a year, you really can physically change. And then there's also the human development too. Especially when you go from college to New York or wherever city you end up, there's a big development stage that happens that just translates in your shot. And then it's also good, and I've heard this as feedback from casting directors, that they, if they see the same thing, same shot over and over for too long, it just looks, it looks like you're not trying, like your career is flat, and they like to see new content, especially now that it's really the mentality where people are just posting like ravenous on all platforms. So I would say once a year is reasonable, you know, and then, but you can get years out of a headshot. You know, if you have a killer headshot that's making you money, I mean, the flip side of that is like, if it's not broke, don't fix it. Yeah. If it's working really well and you're booking a lot, then leave it alone. But if things aren't, you know, if it's flat or you have that feeling it's time to do an upgrade, I would say once a year is like being really on it. If you shoot more than once a year, then you're probably just filling in the gaps on what you don't have. But, or you're trying new things. But once a year, I would say, is like being really on it. Like, you just get new headshots once a year. I would be like, yeah, that person's really on point. And but you could definitely get by 2-3 years. I wouldn't go past 3 years.
I want to go back to the marketing look. What is your opinion? What is your sentiment about when actors post either photography images and or portrait images of them on their social media? And when they post things, because I think there's a game to be had when it's in social media and being strategic. Post what you want, have fun, like show your personality. But if it's not business related to your brand or your brand, it really does you a disservice if you are trying to get a job based out of that or trying to get casting to notice you based out of that. What do you think is one, if not two, acceptable photography images related to the brand of an actor that they should post? Not all the time, but maybe just the occasional, like me and my friend, we went out into Central Park and we did like a nice little photo shoot. Like, how could I best be taking advantage of something like that?
Okay. So you're just asking like from a photographer's viewpoint.
Sure.
So, okay. That's a good question. What makes a picture enjoyable to look at? And really what I think when it's a picture of someone is that it captures their personality and it feels genuine. So if you can get a good genuine shot of yourself where it looks like you're having fun and it's real, then it's probably post-worthy. If it looks and feel like you, like people show me really crappy headshots of themselves that they love. They love it because it's genuine. Like they're having a real laugh. The lighting's shit. The composition's not great. You know, everything's off, but it's a great picture of them. It's because it's capturing them. That's what they love about it. So if you can capture that moment, and any camera does that, iPhone, any camera, then I would say it's post-worthy because then you're sharing something that's genuine to you. I think if your posts are really, and this is my personal preference with posts, if they're really just empty, like you're trying so hard just to like pull likes and it's the same shot. To me, it kind of, I guess, is repetitive though. If you sell the TNA and that works for you, then I guess like, then that has its place. But I would say genuine, that shows like your personality is post-worthy. You know, if it captures a moment and it looks nice and you feel solid with it, then I would say post it. It's so subjective though with social media, how people do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, some people just like totally bomb it, constantly just posting. I mean, how much interesting shit are you doing in a day? It's like,
yeah.
So I don't know. I think there's a balance with it too. But if it captures you and you feel like, I love this picture, then post it. If you don't feel that way and you're just posting the post, then it's like a portfolio, quality over quantity. Two strong shots are better than 10 okay ones.
Yeah. There's as far as to the note about social media, side note, this is just for me, you guys. Now I'm just, we're just shooting the shit, having to talk. But I always assess, cause I go through a social media cleanse, maybe like every 6 months. What are you doing for my life? Do I care for the material you post? And is it benefiting me in any way? But then I said, Corben, are you doing that for your audience? Not that it's grand, but still, like, I know that there's a difference between when people enjoy my dance videos as opposed to just a not well taken photo or me and in my everyday environment. Like, there are just some things that I realize do well or people have a lot more interest in. I did a photo shoot with Trina Murray, who's a body paint artist. And I don't know why to this day, but I had more likes than I've ever had on that photo as opposed to any of my dance videos, which I found was so interesting. But because it was different, it was, I guess, authentic, and it was just a completely different medium that everyone enjoyed. I was like, wow, there's something to be had here. Not that every photo is going to be a body paint or something like that, but still, it was a value that people, having respect for the consumer. That's the best way I can put it. Just having respect for the consumer. Why should they take time out of their day either to watch, listen, and or to see what you're putting out there?
Yeah,
that is very hard. And you know what I'm saying? That's so hard.
Oh yeah. It's like, I've even watched some stuff that I post in the past and I look back on, I'm just like, shut up. I don't want you to hear this. Like, either it's like, you're trying to motivate or you're trying to, it's like, shut up, just do your work. If you have something cool to say, really cool to say, or really cool to post, then post it. Otherwise, like, this is how I talk to myself with this. I'm like, shut the hell up. I'm posting like nonsense. Why? Because I have a business and I need to get attention. Like, I feel like for me, that's a false platform to be sharing stuff with. I've tried it. Like, I've totally tried that, you know? And so I think it for me, I post much less now, but if I post something, it's like, okay, it's something I want to share.
Yeah.
And so that's my platform on how I'm posting now. It just keep it like, at least it's genuine. Maybe it's not interesting to everyone. So dude, body art and nudity. I mean, come on. Those are two power plays for getting likes. Like, I don't know what the shot was that you posted, but body art is awesome. It really is awesome to look at. And then if you're like nude and covered up and like, you have to see through that, like, the way they hide that with body art is like really the whole thing. It's like, I could see why that gets a lot of likes.
It was, I'm not going to lie, because when I saw, we started a full day of shooting with that and I was the first one on set. So I had to be there at the crack ass of dawn. Well, 8 a.m. and it was in Brooklyn. So I went an hour out of my way from Washington Heights to go down to Brooklyn. Ugh, my point is, I was there for 2 hours being painted up. But the end product was amazing. And people were walking by like, oh my God. Like, it truly is a beautiful art. And that was the first time that I've ever felt vulnerable and self-conscious, because like I could not hide, and I here I am naked.
I
like it was just, it was such an experience. And we spent all day shooting. But I tell you what, those people who were in the park that day at the Guggenheim, at the Central Park and Times Square, they got their money's worth out of their New York trip. They got a full New York experience. And here we are shooting this commercial. Like it's just, it was cool.
You were outside doing this.
Yeah, all day. And I had to stay in it all day.
Were you naked? Like, were you painted naked?
Yeah. So I had like nude underwear, but I was essentially naked with only that. All day. I mean, she gave me a robe to wear throughout the day because we didn't want anything smudging and or wearing off. And she's as little movement as possible. I don't want you to get sweaty or overheated, because then they'd have to do touch-ups, right? I think they only had to touch me up once, which was pretty cool considering I started at 8 and we didn't finish till midnight.
Yeah.
And we were on the go. And I was like, wow. Anyways, it was a complete, and I would have never ever have thought to try that before in my career. So it was definitely interesting and I really enjoyed it. So
I see, like, I mean, I get why you would get likes. Like I'm going to look it up when we're done with this. I'll check it out.
Hey.
Body art's cool, man. But I think body art, really, really cool stuff.
Well, and I just shared a photo also on my stories from our session. That was like almost 6 months ago, 8 months ago. Wow. So I'd be very curious to see how well that does. Not that I'm trying to get likes, you guys. I'm just saying, like, it's just something that I notice. I do take a sense of what does work and what doesn't work. And there's something to be said for paying attention to, I hate to say this, but the algorithm or of what your audience values most. And if your thing is nudity and body, I understand why people in the fitness industry wear little to no clothes, or that's just all that they shoot. But then I'm like, that's a lot of vanity. However, that is their business, and that's what they're selling is the image. So do
and
you?
That always sells. Sex will always sell.
Yeah.
Say what you want. It always gets likes.
Yeah. So wrapping it out with our closing questions. What advice would mature you give to younger you just starting out?
I'll be honest with you. I would say probably enjoy it more. Mm-hmm. Like have more confidence in the outcome.
Yeah.
I don't have any regrets on any decisions or how I went about things. I really made a conscious effort to not work, like to really do it as hard as I wanted and only do what I wanted. So I have no regrets in that regard, but I always worked. And I think this is anyone that's self-employed, and I would put actors and models in that container, and musicians as well, and dancers, that you're always walking on glass. Like, when's the next job? What am I doing with my life? Is this the right move? You know, all my other friends have jobs and I'm still have roommates. Like, and I would say trust in myself more on the outcome. Mm-hmm. And that mentality lives with you too. Even if you go into making six figures, that mentality still sits with you for some time. And I think the faster you get away from that, the faster you actually develop. Like, have faith in yourself. And as an actor, like, you create your own sphere of greatness, and that you hold yourself to that realm. So when you do great, you say, I did great. If you bomb an audition, you say, I bombed an audition. But you don't let somebody else tell you that you did a great job. Like, that should not influence your sphere. And nor should it, when you bomb an audition, that should hurt because you know you bombed it, not because somebody else told you you bombed it. Like, if you felt like you crushed it and then you left and the casting director's like, that was a really bad audition. Like, you should not have a bad day after that. And that takes time to do that. Like, if I take a great shot, someone's like, hey, that's a shitty shot. I got to be honest with you, that actually means nothing to me. Your input means absolutely nothing to me. Because I know if it's a good shot, if somebody says, oh my God, it's the world's most amazing shot, it moves me just as much. I've already made up my sphere on if I've determined it to be good or not. And it's not ego driven. You create your own sense of self-worth and you be the judge of that. And we're in a business too, where you put yourself out there to be criticized. Yeah. So it's even more important to create that platform of self-worth. It's not ego. It's you controlling your own environment and you creating your own sense of self-worth and not letting other people dictate that for you. I think that's really important. But trust where you're headed. Make sure that you still love what you do. You can be struggle with it, but that if you don't hate it, then it's probably worth still pursuing as long as you still love it. Mm-hmm. The moment you hate it, stop and redirect. And and like create that sense of self-worth, like know that you're great and know when you do good and when you mess up and you hold yourself accountable to both of those things. But don't let people control your day and your emotions. It's easier said than done, but it's important to recognize that.
Professional and private, where does the future look like going for you?
I'm going hard right now with shooting online content. So I'm getting on the educational side and also like blowing my YouTube channel up and shooting a ton of videos now, pretty much bringing everyone behind the scenes on how I built my business. Mm-hmm. So I'm shooting an educational course on how to start your business as a photographer and how I did it and how I've made a successful business of it in a tough city. And these are very teachable skills. And then also I'm just doing a ton of behind the scenes content of like all of my photo shoots that I'm doing now. Both my studio in New York and also overseas in Europe, I have a studio in Norway, which is the one I'm at now, and my shoots over here and recording the whole experience and putting it all out there. I'm totally becoming transparent on how I built my business to get to help anyone else that's interested being an entrepreneur and a photographer. This, like, I'm going to show everything that I did on how I built it from scratch.
Oh,
successfully. So that's where my head's at now. Like, okay, now I want to motivate others to, you know, if you have the dream idea to do it, then here's how I did it. And it's completely plausible. You really can build a dream lifestyle doing this.
Dude, right on. Where can the people find you on social media?
Sean Turi.
That's it, you guys.
Sean Turi, type it. If you're on Instagram, Sean Turi, Facebook, Sean Turi, website, Sean Turi.
Consistent.
YouTube, Sean Turi. I just had a conversation with a photographer trying to get her branding, and I'm like, just go with your name.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't pigeonhole you. It is powerful, and it's you. So I've tried different names when I started my business, Sean Turi Photo Photography, Sean Turi New York, Sean Turi, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
It's Sean Turi. That's who I am. And it has no limits, I guess.
If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe so you're notified when a new episode is posted. Rate and review this podcast and be sure to share with your friends. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on next week's episode of How to Business in Show Business.